This encore program for Fire on the Earth was chosen based on the request from many listeners.
Fire on the Earth. Our Holy Father has said the Church is missionary by her very nature. The Church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the Church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host, and we're here again today with my good friend Chuck Greenwood. And Chuck has been sharing with us really a powerful and moving, both inspiring and challenging story of his own journey of faith, and kind of the heart of where we've got. Let me just say first, if you haven't had a chance to tune into the program this week, I encourage you to go to our website at renewalministries.net, and the programs are archived there. Fire on the Earth are Chuck's first three programs this week. I think if you haven't heard them, you'd really want to hear them. You can listen to them on your computer, download them, put them on your iPod. Also, before I forget, tonight on EWTN, as well at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Television Crossing the Goal will be on. You can tune in. It'll be on again on Sunday night at 6:30 p.m. and Monday morning at 6:30 a.m. But where we've gotten, Chuck shared with us this traumatic reality that he came to see at a certain point after a serious conversion to the Lord as an adult, that many of the troubles that he was having in his life were rooted in the fact that he was the survivor of an abortion as a child. And kind of a long story how he got to that point of realization you can hear on the programs on the archive. The Lord began the healing process, but then Chuck was saying the light became too bright and he got scared. And so the spiritual battle unfolded very, I think, intensely and dramatically. So that's kind of where we are today. And so Chuck, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so there we are. And you say you got scared. Here you are living in Connecticut. You got this big job. Going back and forth, you've been seeing this psychiatrist, the head of psychiatry at Yale. He's helped you. You've been filled with the Spirit. Your faith is returning. You're studying this, going back to church. You got all these wonderful friends. And all this stuff about your life is starting to open up, this great trauma that you had. And it's very sensitive and very challenging stuff. And you're simultaneously moving toward healing, but you're also getting scared at the same time about the whole process. Is that the right way to understand
it? Yeah, that's a good way to understand it. And when I look back at it now, you know, it's one of those things, you know, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. And it was not only just me, my family was flourishing. Yeah. My children, you know, they were in good Catholic schools. Diane was, her health was still good at that point in time, and we'll get to that. And so everything was flourishing. I had support, and I basically ran. It was too much.
You ran from all of that you had built up in Connecticut and all the help and the support the Lord put around you. Why did you run?
You know, and I used the excuse, and there was some career logic there. I mean, I was still a young person, and the problem is I got so far so fast that there was a certain tenure thing before you could get certain top jobs.
Yeah.
And so I took a job. My way of doing it was taking a job in Phoenix, Arizona, and moving my whole family, uprooting my children, sensitive time in their life.
Did you have, Chuck, in your conscious mind, some of what was going on? You know, this job opportunity comes, you're doing all the math of what it means for your career. But was there moments where you thought, like, I want to get out of Connecticut right now? Because the light's too bright, and I'm too vulnerable here right now in this position, and I want to run from all this. I mean, was there a little bit of that in your mind, or
no.
Was that more subconscious?
No, it was more subconscious.
Yeah.
I think now I look at that and say, wow, it should have been so clear to do. But I was able to, Peter, I developed the skill over my lifetime to be able to compartmentalize things.
Yeah.
You know, and I could shut off thoughts, things. I had basically, you know, beaten my conscience to death, you know, as I was growing up. I had basically destroyed, I think, my conscience.
Hmm.
And so, you know, if I didn't have somebody, a brother or sister there, you know, really keeping me on track, it was easy for me to drift.
Yeah.
You know, it was very easy for me to drift in habits because, like I say, my conscience, I had basically subdued.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have that. And I was just kind of reacting. I went back into kind of a reactive mode. And, of course, it made sense, you know, the logic on the piece of paper and all that, you know, the job, Phoenix, lifestyle, warmth, get out of the winter, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I basically took my family on a journey that not only, you know, imperiled me, but it imperiled them as well. It took years for my children to recover from that decision, and it took my wife years to recover from it. So, I mean, I not only led myself back into slavery, but I took my family with me.
Yeah, and so back into slavery, can I ask, When you say that, I'm not saying get in all the gory details. Right. I'm just saying, what does that mean for you, and why did that situation?
Slavery means to me is I went back into focusing in on my job and my career.
Yeah.
You know, I went out to Phoenix. I got a lot of money.
Yeah.
I bought toys. I had a nice, you know, Porsche 944. I mean, I went right back.
As you went
I said,
for
it. Worked for Faro.
Yeah.
And I literally did work for Faro, in my opinion. I took this job as the vice president of human resources for an aerospace company out there, big company. And, you know, as I found out, I didn't interview him like I had interviewed people that I used to hire. I just was interested in what he was going to do for me. Of course, after I started working with him, I realized that he was probably the most amoral human being I had ever met in my entire life. And he, you know, he was on the board of Planned Parenthood and used to have meetings of Planned Parenthood at the office. He used to try to, he would do things like if presidents came in for a weekend meeting, if their wives went with him, he would say, want me to set you up with a date? I mean, he was just a freewheeling genius, kind of a level person who was absolutely, and at least to my credit somewhat, I recognized it, but it was like, my God, what have I done? And it turned out, it didn't take a long time for me to figure that out. But what it did is the repercussions of that, you know, that decision lasted for a long time.
Yeah. There's the old line you used to hear that oranges don't grow on the North Pole, talking about, you know, one of the things you need, especially as a new Christian or a person who's beginning to take your faith seriously and we're coming out of habit patterns of sin and dealing with wounds in our lives. And we're still very vulnerable and a mess. And the flesh is still very much alive in all of us, you know. And I say, well, you need to be in an environment where you're actually going to grow. Don't put yourself in an environment where you're not going to be able to grow, and you need to surround yourself with that kind of support and all the rest of it. So you're saying you put yourself in some ways in a situation, it was just what you absolutely didn't need in your life.
Absolutely.
And as you look back now, what was moving you at the time? You know
what
I mean?
At the time, like I say, it was the movie. Now that I look back on it, I had to get away from Connecticut because the light was getting too bright.
Okay.
And so I used the career excuse as I think about it. And and I go there, and it looks like a good job and paper and everything. But it just what it also did is it took me away from my support.
Yeah.
And so all my old patterns, all those old sins, those comfortable sins, all of that resurrects itself. And you really start feeling bad about yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're feeling bad about what you're doing, you're not close to your faith, and you're working for this person every day is literally, I used to drive to work in tears and pray. And I started praying, please get me out of here, Lord.
Yeah.
I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
It took almost 2 years of that praying every day to get me out of here. I have made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen overnight. And I think it was part of having to live through that and seeing what it did to me and did to my family that it forever should have caused me never to want to do anything like that again.
Yeah.
But it was the most unsatisfying and traumatic probably couple of years of my life. Of that point in time, that was when my wife's health started to deteriorate and things like that.
I think one of the things that, I mean, I certainly have experienced in my life, and I know many others have too, is that when we come to meet the Lord, we kind of start growing in our faith, and there's a kind of honeymoon period where you just feel it, there's a lot of grace to do the right thing. There's just a lot of grace to do the right thing, and your heart's in the right place, and so many positives. The arrows are all pointing up, and there's so much hope. And then the Lord allows you, out of mercy and love, to see the reality of where you still are.
Yeah.
You know? And we end up running into our own weakness, or habit patterns of sin emerge again, and it can get incredibly discouraging. It can be very discouraging, like, oh man, I've gotten nowhere. I'm right back in this again. I'm here I am again. And then it's a little bit worse. You say, I can't tell anybody now because I'm a good guy now. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Right?
You know what I mean? And I can't, who am I going to talk to? And then what the enemy wants to do is he said, look, the only safe place for you is to get out of the light and get into the dark, in the sense of you can't tell anybody this. You can't. And so it plays on our pride. It plays on all that stuff. That's such a common experience, you know, for so many men, I think, we're battling. Think of the number of guys, Chuck, who around the country, and this epidemic of pornography. How many businessmen are watching this in their hotel rooms at night, or seeing prostitutes on the road, or doing whatever, and it's their secret in life. They're hiding it from everybody because they're too ashamed. And they got stuff inside that has never been dealt with, that they don't even know it's there. Like, you didn't know the roots of what you were describing as your narcissism and the rest of those kinds of things. And you came to see it by God's grace at a certain point. And that's the only way, when light gets shed on it, it's the only way that we have hope of ever getting through that stuff.
Right.
But boy, as soon as you start falling again, it's so easy to say, man, I got to get out of here. I don't want people to see who I really am.
Yes. You know? No, and there is that, especially after you've, like I say, you've had the experiences that I had.
Yeah.
And met the people that I was able to meet and that, and to slip back in that. The only thing that was that, the thing I learned the most about in Arizona was sin.
Yeah.
I got a great understanding of what it is like, what it does to you, what it does to other people. And
can you describe that a little bit more, what you mean by that?
Serious sin, serious weakness in sin gets a hold on you, and it begins to shape everything you think about and you do. Mm-hmm. You don't have freedom. You've mm-hmm. signed away, you've given away your freedom to mm-hmm. that sin.
Yeah.
Even if it's not even a spiritual influence, even if it's just habit, but you've given it, just like a person that sometimes serious sin can be just as similar to an addiction.
Yeah.
And where you get addicted and you do things that you hate, and then you end up hating yourself. And that's when the enemy gets you into that position, he has you.
Yeah.
Because you feel trapped and you're never going to get out of this. And you just keep on repeating the same thing. That's what serious sin does to you.
Yeah.
It destroys you, but it also destroys those around you.
Yeah.
It's not just a personal thing.
Yeah.
And so I really got a good feel for that. And I saw it in others. I saw it in obviously the person that I worked with. But, I mean, mm-hmm. it is as awful as you could be.
And you saw it impact your family, you said,
yes.
In some way.
Yes, my children. Took them out of the best Catholic schools, put them in public schools.
Yeah.
And they went from wearing suits and uniforms to wearing tank tops and shorts.
Yeah.
That's Phoenix. Scottsdale, where you lived. And so, I mean, it changed their lives. The most time, one's in high school, one's in middle school, and one's just about ready to enter. The most important time spiritually, and I take them away from their Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't follow it myself. And I leave them to the culture to shape them. And all their friends and all their relationships and their positive things. And in my wife's health deteriorated at that point in time too, which we haven't talked about
yet.
But it really started to deteriorate to the point where she was suicidal. And
wow.
So I was dealing with that at the same time.
We could take up tomorrow's show, sure. Just talk about that whole experience of your journey with Diane and her health and the rest of it. But I think one of the things that does emerge here too, and I think we as fathers need to see this, and I don't say it to be lay a guilt trip on anybody, but there's a reality. When a dad takes his eye off the ball spiritually and the covering that God's given him,
absolutely,
and the authority, he
Peter.
Gives permission for the enemy to come in and sort of ransack the garden.
Yep.
It's a reality. And I think I experienced that in my own family growing up, and lots of people have. And the Lord redeems that, and the Lord rescues us from that. If we let him become Lord, he puts our life back in order again. And certainly that's what's happened in your life over time and in my life by the mercy of God. He's helped us and brought us into those places. But friends, tune in again tomorrow. Chuck's going to be with us, and I invite others to join us as well. God bless you. Have a good day.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'm delighted to be able to offer you my new booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? At the heart of the new evangelization is a fresh proclamation of the gospel. But for many people, even many Catholics, they wonder, what is the message? What exactly is at the heart of that proclamation? In this simple booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? I take a look at and present in a very specific and simple way what is the core of what we're called to proclaim in this great and important missionary moment in the history of the church. If you'd like a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.